1,000 watts ERP, you're going to have all of the things that you thought were wireless facilities become reviewed under subsection D, which the intent was to have wireless reviewed under C and broadcast facilities, these higher power things, reviewed under D. So the result of that interpretation is completely contrary to the legislative intent of why you established the threshold in the first place.
And so do you have examples of other facilities that we've permitted similar to the one you're asking us to permit, where we would have applied the code the way you're interpreting it?
Well, the best that I can say is if you look at the staff briefing that Sylvia Kate provided, I believe that she says that there are roughly 1,000 cases that were processed previously under the assumption of what we're talking about in terms of this interpretation. So you'd have literally hundreds of cases that would have come out differently because you would have then looked at them under subsection D, and you would have tried to group towers, you would have done all these things that the code is clearly not trying to do with regard to wireless facilities. Stepping back
on that point, you're saying that not only is the intent clear in terms of the legislative intent, but you're saying if you look at our past practice,
that's right,
you believe that we've consistently applied the standard that you think should apply to your case.
That's correct, and I think that if you don't look at it that way, it produces a number of unintended consequences, many of which I detailed in my hearing memo, and at the end of the day, it creates an absurd result, which is something that should be avoided when you're trying to...
Doesn't that then throw us back to this question, and I appreciate Commissioner Leonard has a lot more experience in this area than I do as the former commissioner in charge, but if we accept your point about intent and practice, then doesn't it throw us back to the remaining technical argument about whether the hearing officer should have accepted the report that was filed and or should accept, I guess, take notice of the fact that under federal law it has to be below 1,000. So either way, just make that finding.
Yes. Once you get past the interpretive question, which is the first sub-issue under the threshold issue, then you're faced with the factual question of does this facility operate at 1,000 watts ERP or less? And we think the way you resolve that is the recognizing that as a matter of federal law, the 1,000 watt standard, and then the factual determination by our experts.
Colleagues, do you have enough to proceed just to hear some more, and we can bring Ms. Kate back later if necessary? Thank you, sir, for your testimony.
Thank you.
And so now, Carla, how many people have signed up to testify in support of the appellant?
No one else signed up in support.
All right. So that means we next up is the principal opponent. Would the principal opponent please come forward?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello.
Just need your name and who you represent in this proceeding.
Yes. My name is Chris Hill. I am here on my own behalf as one of the neighbors, and the Mount Scott Arleta Neighborhood Association also agreed to have me appear as the principal opponent.
Welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I also have some written testimony to submit to you today. It's more or less argument and referring to things in the record. It contains no new evidence, and I'm happy to have that distributed to you right now.
Turn that over to Carla, if you would. Have you furnished a copy to the other side?
I have not.
So we'll just... She's not.
Nor have I seen their memo or proposed new evidence, although I do have copies. I'm happy
if you could furnish Lindley with a copy and the appellant with a copy, that'd be great.
So I do thank you for helping us to sort out this dispute.
An interesting dispute.
Yes, it is. I would also like to compliment Sylvia Kate throughout this process. She's been very polite, very easy to work with. And same for the hearings officer, Mr. Frank. I thought that he was very good with public process type issues. There are basically three things that I want to cover today. They are the three big points that are in the memo that I just submitted to you. The first one, starting with how we figure out if we're under sub-C or sub-D, the code does say facilities operating at 1,000 watts or less are under sub-C. Everything else is under sub-D. The plain meaning of the word facility is that it's the whole thing. And hearings officer Frank more or less agreed with that at the hearing, even if he did ultimately reach a different conclusion. If you look at the text and context of the code, I think that that bears true as well. If we look at 33.920.540, it lists several examples, including broadcast towers, communication towers, point-to-point microwave towers, some of which have multiple antennas on them. So to refer to a facility as just one antenna, we are going outside of the meaning of the word, basically the meaning of the word facility. To reinforce that the plain meaning of it is exactly that, the Verizon Consultant Report distinguishes between the facility and the antennas. This is the August Hatfield and Dawson report. The proposed wireless facility will have a new monopole with 9 panel antennas. The BDS report made a similar distinction. The applicant requests a wireless telecommunications facility that will include up to a total of 12 antennas. The code also mentions the difference between towers that support facilities and facilities supporting at least 2 additional transmitter or antenna systems. So to say that that particular language in the code means antennas, I think, ignores the word facility. One other thing, a point raised by Mr. Grillo, essentially their position is sub-C, facilities operating at 1,000 watts ERP or less, means wireless facilities. If that's really what the code meant, then that's what the code could have said. The council that passed that particular set of language could have simply said, all wireless cell phone facilities shall meet these requirements, and then list the requirements in sub-C. Everything else, or even listing it as broadcast facilities, are under sub-D. But that is not, in fact, what the code says. The code talks about the ERP, the power emissions of the facility. Where did the 1,000 watts ERP come from? And this is something where Ms. Kate, in response post-hearing, submitted some of the documents, which I cite at some length in this memo. The FCC, we start with their measuring exposure. One of the things that they tried to do was lighten the regulatory load so that if we have things that are not likely to lead to too much exposure, then we can lessen the amount of review that they have to go through. The 1,000 watts ERP is essentially a shorthand for exposure. Throughout that, even in the Code of Federal Regulations, in the Local Officials Guide to RF, and in the OET Bulletin 65, in all of those places, the FCC makes it perfectly clear that they are looking at all facilities, all things that are emitting RF on a particular site. And they variously use the word site, location, and I apologize, I forget the others, but they use a variety of words to express the general area and the general project. So to the extent the council relied on the FCC in the past, the FCC has made it quite clear that they are talking about all antennas, and sure, they did distinguish with sectorized antennas, all antennas pointing in the same direction. But nevertheless, it is more than one channel of one antenna. So, is this facility over 1,000 watts or under 1,000 watts? I think a pretty plain meaning and contextual meaning of the term facility would tell you that we have to look at everything, and when you add everything up, it is well over 1,000 watts. Now, the significance of that, I'm not sure was something that really came out before, and Commissioner Leonard, getting into some of your questions, what is the difference between a sub-C analysis and a sub-D analysis, right, under 1,000 watts versus over 1,000 watts. There are two common factors. One of them is the public benefit of the project outweighs the impacts which cannot be mitigated. The other one is it complies with the RF exposure rules. Under a sub-C, we also have some more concrete things. You can't have a monopole within 2,000 feet of another monopole. And I believe there was visual something about the look of the pole to make sure that it doesn't stand out. So that's the difference between those two analyses. Other than that, you know, the two things that are common to those are the public benefit of the project must outweigh the impacts. The impacts that cannot be mitigated. Here, nowhere in the record does Verizon show that they can mitigate any of the impacts. You know, there's voluminous testimony at the hearings level from me and from my neighbors, some of whom you'll hear in a minute, talking about the impacts of this facility. At no place in the record did Verizon rebut any of that. At no place in the record did Verizon show that they were going to do anything or could do anything to rebut that. So weighed against that, we have the project purpose, right? The public benefit, which is Verizon, one cell phone carrier among many, wants to have better coverage inside its buildings or inside buildings from 52nd to 72nd on Foster, which, while it is something which is a public benefit, does not outweigh the significant impacts that showed up at the hearing. And the third big point that I'd like to make today, and the second factor that is common to both a sub-C and a sub-D analysis, is the FCC's exposure guidelines. And here's where we get into some of the technical issues. And I apologize about having to get into that, but you know, I think that it is important because it's pretty clear that based upon Verizon's own engineering reports, they do not comply with the FCC's emissions guidelines. The reason why is they did not account for the time of the exposure. The FCC sets maximum public exposure standards, MPE standards, which for the public in uncontrolled situations are a time limit of 30 minutes. So if you're exposed to that level of exposure, that level of emission for more than 30 minutes, then you've gone over the federal MPE limit, and it is a violation of federal law. The OET Bulletin 65, which is Exhibit H26 in the record, on pages 10 and 11, covers the bulk of this. They have an equation there showing exposure power, milliwatts per centimeter squared, times the time of the exposure must equal the MPE standard in milliwatts per centimeter squared and 30 minutes. So the analysis that they went through in the consultant's report, which is at H28A, it's an attachment to Ms. Hopfer's post-hearing submission, show 7.09% of the public MPE limit at the adjoining apartment complex. This is one of those properties that is just along the west side of the Mount Scott Fuels site. They also went through and did a measurement study for RF in the neighborhood. There are ambient levels of RF floating around out there. They found that as 0.61 of the public MPE limit when averaged over the number of sites that they measured it at. So we have in the backyard of the properties on the west side of this project, 7.70% of the public MPE limit. If somebody is outside for 6.5 hours in their backyard, they are exposed to 100.1% of the public MPE limit. So is it a reasonable assumption that somebody will be outside for 6.5 hours? And unless Verizon can show they've limited people's access to that particular area in their own backyard, they can't show that they comply with the RF transmission guidelines, the exposure guidelines. They have to submit an EA, an environmental assessment under NEPA, to the FCC for approval of this particular project. And until they've done that, they can't get it. They can't comply with the FCC's guidelines, and by extension, they can't comply with the part of the code dealing with that, which is 33, I believe it is 815.225. No, sorry, 33.274.040. My apologies. One of the other things that you should take into consideration when dealing with Verizon and numbers, and this is something that Mr. Frank hammered them on, their numbers have changed over time. And they've gone from less than 10,000 watts down to 39 watts in their most recent things. And if you look at Exhibit A4, which is the initial RF transmission facility form, that has two pieces of information. One is the less than 10,000 watts, which should give you pause about whether this is a facility that's over or under 1,000 watts. But also on that, they have a listing of the power density, 0.59 milliwatts per centimeter squared. That is the same unit as the federal MPE limit. The reason that that's important is in Verizon's consultants report and in the tables of the Portland City Code dealing with RF emissions, you can calculate that the maximum allowed is 0.459 milliwatts per centimeter squared. So on the face of the application, back in March, before anybody was paying attention, we have Verizon submitting something into the record to the decision maker to say that we're going to have a power density of 0.59 milliwatts per centimeter squared when the allowable amount is less than that at 0.459 milliwatts per centimeter squared. You should take that into consideration in deciding whether or not you're going to rely on their numbers. Another reason you should take that, take their numbers into consideration is looking at their August report from Hatfield and Dawson and comparing that to the October report from Hatfield and Dawson. In August, we have 39 watts ERP emitted and a calculated exposure right at the apartment complex of 0.2263. Well, in October, we show up with 10 times the emissions, 392.8 watts ERP, and at that same spot, we have an exposure of 0.221, slightly less, for a difference in power emissions of a magnitude of 10, actually exactly 10. It defies logic to have more power emissions and less exposure, right? That's the whole thing behind the FCC's guidelines, is to prevent the exposure. As to absurd results, if I can cover this in 20 seconds or less, if you believe Verizon's version of the 1,000-watt rule, one antenna, one channel, they can gang 100 antennas on one tower, and that's still less than 1,000 watts, even though that's not what the FCC says, and even though that is many, many more watts than are allowed under the code.
I think we're probably going to have some questions, Mr. Hill, so let me start with my colleagues. Commissioner Leonard?
Yes. So, Mr. Hill, the easiest question to ask is that, according to Mr. Grillo, who represents Verizon, by definition, these facilities, as regulated by the FCC, cannot emit more than 1,000 ERP, and thus, by definition, his argument is, obviously, it doesn't emit more than 1,000 ERP. Now, I've read your memo, and I appreciate your argument, particularly where you quote how the FCC calculates ERP. And just so you know, I will be asking them about that.
Okay.
But respond to his position that they're regulated by the federal government via the FCC, and by definition they couldn't, they wouldn't be allowed to install a facility that emitted more than 1,000.
The only thing they would have to do is to go get an environmental assessment, right? Go through their NEPA requirements, the National Environmental Policy Act. Once they do that, they submit it to the FCC. The FCC will make a decision about whether they need to do an EIS and give it a yes or a no. They can emit more than 1,000 watts. And if you have any doubt about that, even the CFRs, this is 47 CFR Part 1.1307, it has a table as you read down into there. In there, they get into the operating power of these units, and at least as far as I can tell, they can operate it more than that.
They can.
As far as I know, yes.
So have they submitted any documentation for this proposed unit to the FCC that you've seen?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And I assume that if they did have permission from the FCC, we would see it or hear about it at some place in the permit file. I think that the way that they've certified that compliance was with the Hatfield and Dawson reporting.
Do you have any documentation from the FCC relative to any other facility in the city that has an effective an ERP greater than 1,000 that we have treated as less than 1,000?
I do not. But as to that concern, I would certainly agree that that is something which is a bombshell, might overstate it, but it's certainly something to be concerned about. I think all of the prior ones, if they were approved under sub C, would probably also pass muster under sub D, at least as to the two elements that are common to those. One other thing I would point out, and a way to explain the difference in moving forward prospectively, I am not sure that anybody ever raised this before. My general impression from Ms. Kate and from the hearings officer is nobody has ever really gotten into what is over or under 1,000 watts, because nobody's really challenged that or looked into what that means in the code.
But again, don't presuppose any conclusion on my part by the questions I ask. It's my way of helping me better understand the issues.
Sure.
But you're basically saying all the decisions the council has made heretofore are wrong, because we have incorrectly interpreted how one calculates ERP. I would think that given the tremendous amount of work you have done, you would have anticipated this question before now and come before us and said, no, I'm not asking you to say everything you've done before is wrong. Just say from now on you're going to do it this way, but rather would have come up with an example where on a very specific facility, you pick the facility, you have documentation to show that the FCC has calculated the total ERP is 9,270, and you, City of Portland, incorrectly regulated it as less than 1,000 ERP, and thus, yes, you've been applying the standard incorrectly for all these years. Do you have any examples?
I do not have any specific example like that. I also, in terms of things that were done in the past, I think that they were decided with a previous understanding. Those are all going to stay in terms of prospectively. Once this came to light, I think that all decisions in the future should be made with a correct understanding of the code as based upon the FCC regs.
Thank you. Commissioner Saltzman.
So, Mr. Hill, I guess if these facilities, or this facility in particular, is subject to subsection D, and I guess all facilities that we've perhaps approved previously that fit into the same category, doesn't that mean they'd all have to either be up on Skyline or Healy Heights? And wouldn't that sort of defeat the very purpose of what I understand they need, dispersal for antennas for wireless services?
Not necessarily. I believe that the code does distinguish between things that are over a certain amount that is above even the 1,000-watt distinction elsewhere. My recollection is it's either a 10,000 or 100,000 watt broadcast facility communications tower. My recollection of perusing the titles of Chapter 33, there are some special districts just like that. Mm-hmm. And so those things were put up there, I assume, because they were the best place for them.
You're saying those are things like 10,000 or above?
My recollection is there is a much higher ERP number elsewhere in the code. I did not really prepare to discuss
okay,
that
well,
today,
we can bring staff back up for that, but okay.
Sure. And yeah, you know, the difference between a sub-C analysis and a sub-D analysis, the sub-C certainly has some other very concrete things like the 2,000-foot rule. A sub-D analysis, I think, invokes a lot more discretion on the part of the decision maker. And, you know, it sure would be nice to get some more concrete rules under sub-D to figure out, you know, if we're under 1,000 versus over 1,000 so that we have to rely less on volume of comments and more on a set of rules that everybody knows, both the applicants but also the neighborhoods.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
First, thank you for your presentation. I commend you. It's very clear and brought up some arguments that I haven't heard in 20 years of looking at this issue, and including the last 3 years with pretty intensive discussions. So thank you for raising those issues. Did you raise the issue of maximum public exposure at the hearing?
I did not, but the maximum public exposure issues, I did not have that information until after the hearing. And honestly, I didn't have it until it was middle of December when I got all of the documents that showed up post-hearing during that 7-day timeline. So, did I have that? Well, you know, if I dug into the Byzantine portions of federal law and administrative interpretations of the CFRs, it was available, but I also think that the five of you have the ability to decide those issues and use those same arguments because all those facts are already in the record. Right, the FCC documents that I cite in there, OET Technical Bulletin, and also the Local Officials Guide to RF are both attached to Ms. Kate's post-hearing submission memo.
So what I think I heard you just say is that it wasn't raised as a specific issue at the hearing. However, you would like us to consider it now.
Yes, please.
Thank you. And I'm also assuming that you'd like some time to look over the appellant's materials.
Yes. I did not get a chance to take a look at those.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions, if I could.
Yes.
Mr. Hill. Do you agree that the hearing officer determined that ERP, which stands for effective radiated power, is a calculation of the amount of power emitted from one antenna?
I think he did. He split the baby on that issue between the applicant and I suppose the city, who were saying one channel of one antenna is how you measure the ERP of a facility. The point that the opponents made, myself among them, is that the code refers to the facility operating at 1,000 watts or less. So it depends on whether you focus on the way to measure power, and I would certainly agree with you that you have to measure power unit by unit, but the power of the facility is what the code looks to. So the hearings officer was somewhere in between there because he said that it is the code looks to the number of power, the amount of power emitted by multiple channels of a single antenna.
Would you agree then also that the code is not especially clear on the definition of facility?
I would disagree with that. I think that there is only the code refers to a facility as a grouping of things. And that's where we get into the definition at.
I guess let me be more clear.
Sure.
I'm just going off of your submission. Radio frequency transmission facilities has no definition in the code. That's your language.
Correct. Although it is a use category. So while that is technically not a definition, under the PGE template, I would say that that is context. much in the same way that the city has made some analogies about what is practical versus practicable, what is livability versus quality of life, and I might quibble with that particular one, but you know, it is not technically a definition, but it's some pretty good evidence of the meaning of that term.
And I guess since we have now a question before us that involves interpreting our code, looking at some key terms and definitions, and also looking at federal law, ultimately, are we bound by the federal law definition?
I don't know what is in your oath as a council member. Most of the oaths for public officials that I'm aware of require upholding federal constitution and federal law in addition to the state and the local government body.
It's a very heavily regulated area, and so...
The other thing that I would say is 33274040 does essentially rely on the FCC rules regarding exposure. So if you, and that's to avoid the preemption issue, so the city says, you know, we're going to look to federal law about exposure, so you comply with federal law, you've complied with this particular part of the city code.
So if federal law ultimately decides this question, one of the issues we may come back to you later on is whether you believe 47 CFR section 27.4, which defines ERP, ultimately resolves this question, because the appellant cites to that and says that that resolves the question.
What I would say about that is the FCC, elsewhere in its guidance documents, the ones that are cited in my memo, makes it quite clear that whether you are looking at emissions or whether you are looking at exposure, right, emission, power at the source, the emitter, exposure, power at the receiver of that, yeah, in this case, the apartment complex, or whatever it is that we're trying to figure out how much the exposure is. The FCC in both of those situations, in the guidance documents and even in the CFR provision itself, says we're looking at all of that. And the reason is they are trying to regulate exposure. They're trying to minimize exposure below a certain limit. And so there are some guidelines in there, some rules of thumb, 1,000 watts ERP for a facility, but that doesn't get you around the need to comply with the exposure limit.
And I appreciate your point, although I have to say that I'm not sure that the FCC's bulletin and local office guide ultimately carries the day if we were determined that federal law was clear and the code was clear, and that's something we're going to have to grapple with. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there others who wish to testify in opposition?
We have 12 people who signed up opposing the appeal. The first four, please come on up, are Shannon K. O'Connor, Matt Iverson, Jonathan Brandt for Lisa Ann Ross, and Sean Cunningham. And they will be followed by Matthew Cooper, Marcel Hermans, Scott Walla, and Walt Nichols.
So the mayor is not here to give his customary speech, so I'll do my best. Welcome to City Council. Thank you for taking time to join us. We're going to stay here as long as necessary to hear all the evidence and make a judgment about how we're going to proceed. I can tell you that in my experience, though, no party has ever gotten an advantage by having lots of people say the same thing over and over again. So what I would say is it would be most helpful to us to focus on points that maybe are not before us or we haven't heard. If a number of you are coming forward to say the same thing, it is within your discretion to say, I agree with Joe or Mary and what they've said. Again, hearing the same point multiple times doesn't advance your cause. We'll try to follow the first time you make your point. Each of you will have up to 3 minutes, but I encourage you to use less time if possible, because we're going to be paying a very clear attention, close attention to the points that are actually at issue in this appeal. So thank you for being here, and ma'am, why don't you start? All we need is your name. We don't need your address, and you'll have up to 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams. Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for having us today. My name is Shannon Kathleen O'Connor. I just wanted to say that I thought the hearing officer did a great job being fair to all parties involved. us as neighbors, Verizon as well, and everyone had a chance to speak. He said that how he determines his decision is based on substantial evidence in the record, plausible argument and interpretation. He told all of us to keep to the approval criteria, the words itself in the criteria. And I think that was an important point that he made. He said it's very important that we're thorough and but that we stick to what is stated. And I think that he based his decision justly based on what was presented by Verizon Wireless. How feasibility should be interpreted, he had stated that it presented him with more challenges than even the environmental sections in the proposal. He said the approval criteria being discussed requires that substantial evidence be on the record that the proposed tower is the only feasible way to provide the service. And I believe that Verizon Wireless fell a little bit short. I think they could have expanded their research a little bit, looked at other areas. I think they focused on a single area in to put their facility, and they didn't look at other areas that might be a safer placement for members of us in the neighborhood, as well as the city as a whole. I am obviously I live in the neighborhood. I'm also an employee of a local utility company. We are a highly regulated company. I believe in regulation. Regulation protects the community. Regulation and laws and zoning codes protect all of us. One for interpretation. I think this whole case has brought up a really challenging interpretation for you as council members and as we go forward in the future. Obviously, telecommunications is expanding at a rapid rate. We all love our cell phones. But at the same time, we have to protect our community. We have to protect the members of the community, members in the neighborhood from exposure, excessive exposure to emissions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Iverson. I'm the treasurer of the Mount Scott Arleta Neighborhood Association. Thanks for having us here. I do agree with the representative for Verizon that this particular situation represents a very important case, and I would disagree with him. I think that it sets a very dangerous precedent to allow them to build this tower in this spot, given that the engineer's report came from an engineer who is unlicensed in the state of Oregon. To me, having that as the primary basis for their argument is inherently problematic, alarming, and dangerous, as I've said earlier. Other than that, I agree very much with the previous comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Jonathan Brandt. I'm the Sustainability Representative for the Mount Scott Arleta Neighborhood Association. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of Lisa Ann Ross, who is the Board Chair for the Neighborhood Association. In that capacity, I represent the Board of the Neighborhood Association and the citizens and businesses within our neighborhood. I'm testifying against the proposed Verizon cell tower. As laid out in the earlier testimony to the hearings officer, the proposed development does not meet city code and therefore should not be allowed. The hearings officer, experienced in reviewing land use cases and specialized and very familiar with Portland City Code, has already ruled that the application should be denied. His decision was based not just on his findings that the application does not meet city code, but also on the lack of credibility of the applicant and application materials. I feel it is very important for city council Council to uphold the hearings officer decision and to show the citizens of Portland that zoning code does apply everywhere in the city and that City Council indeed supports its mission of providing the protections to Portland citizens by defining up front what is allowed and what isn't. That level of clarity, certainty, and consistency is a basic foundation of our justice system, and it's important for government to uphold that principle. Mount Scott Arleta is a lower-income working-class neighborhood. Through our neighborhood association, we are working on making people feel part and proud of their neighborhood. We are working on a growing number of small-scale projects, getting people involved in their neighborhood and in caring for our neighborhood. Allowing the cell tower at this location would undo a lot of the progress and recent positive direction in our neighborhood. The Mount Scott Field property is already a non-conforming use and a non-conforming development. with its chain link fence, piles of bark, dust, and other significant nuisances for its immediate neighbors and adjacent properties such as dust, noise, and heavy truck traffic, the Mount Scott property is already exacting a fair toll on the livability of our neighborhood. Our citizens, as well as the city, are working hard on improving the livability and quality of life in our neighborhood. The proposed development would not only further aggravate the situation and degrade the appearance of the area, but also establish a facility that would create additional unnecessary obstacles to redeveloping the area into better and more suitable land uses in the future. Several of the city's own plans from the last several years would be undermined and taken back by this proposed development. Portland City Council has added this area's Foster Road to the Lens Urban Renewal Area. The purpose of the Urban Renewal Area is not to further degrade the area. However, that's what would happen if the waivers and exemptions were granted. There are already several other radio frequency transmission facilities within walking and sight distance from this proposed facility, and adding yet another cell tower would turn the stretch of Foster Road into some sort of cell tower alley. Therefore, on behalf of the chair of the Mount Scott Erlita Neighborhood Association, I urge you to not approve this proposed development from Verizon and Mount Scott Fuel. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Sean Cunningham. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to share my concerns today about the Verizon proposal. I am a homeowner in the Mount Scott Arleta neighborhood, and along with my neighbors, I'm working to create and maintain a healthy and vital neighborhood for families, residents, and for businesses. And I'm not here today to tell you that I don't want a cell phone tower near my house for all the obvious reasons, that it's ugly, that it might make my house harder to sell someday, or that I'm afraid about the health risks to my young child. I'm here to ask you respectfully to consider the numerous and fundamental deficiencies in the technical and business cases presented in Verizon's application and to sustain the hearings officer's decision. Verizon's application fails to meet the very high standards of proof required by Portland City Code in this type of land use proceeding by several objective measures. Hearings Officer Frank noted the most substantive of these in his decision, November 2nd, denying the application. Among these, Verizon's data and claims were found to generally lack credibility because of the technical analysis and assertions attributed to an inadequately credentialed and unlicensed Verizon employee. Verizon's claims regarding ERP are inconsistent and unreliable. Their projections don't address the number of channels proposed in relation to the 1,000-watt threshold and are not nearly explicit enough to be clearly understood. Verizon failed to show by a long shot that erecting a giant monopole on this site was the only feasible way to provide service that outweighs the public benefit. And I would add that I'm a Verizon customer, and I don't experience any problems or lack of quality with my own service. Verizon fails to acknowledge even one single impact to nearby residents, let alone mitigate impacts in any way. As a part of the Lens Town Center Urban Renewal Area, we have hopes and aspirations for higher and better conditions in our area than this. So in summary, I ask you to please see that this proposal does not meet the city's criteria and it should not move forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Carla, how many more people have signed up?
We have 8 more.
Could we, just as a courtesy to anyone who is here with a child, could we put them ahead of the list? So if there's anyone here who has a child care issue which would like to testify, we'll give you the courtesy of moving forward now. Ma'am, please come up, and then if you could bring 3 others up, Carla.
Okay. So we'll now also hear Matthew Cooper, Marcel Hermans, and Scott Valla, along with Liz McKeever.
Here. And I apologize. I should have invited you earlier, but Commissioner Fritz only just passed me the note to remind me of the courtesies.
She's not doing too bad, so.
The courtesies of the House. Ma'am,
okay.
Welcome.
Hi. My name is Liz McKeever, and I'm just here to say I do agree with all of my neighbors and all the research that they've done. They've done really well, and I just want to say that I am opposed to it and that I am the House...
Have you just lifted
I'm
up?
The lifted up. The home that is directly behind where the cell phone tower is going to be. My house was not in any of those pictures, but if you stand in my backyard, it'd be towering over you. My main concern is with the 2,000 square foot rule or ordinance, whatever it is. If I stand in my front yard, that other cell phone tower is very visible. I can see it where I'm standing. With this cell phone tower, if I go around in my backyard and play with my daughter and my husband back there, which will be longer than 6 hours in the summer each, you know, day, but that one will be very visible, will be towering over me. It'll be 50 feet from my property line, and it's just not something that I want in my neighborhood. And I'd ask you to adhere to the laws and the rules that we have with the 2,000 square foot and everything else that my neighbors have pointed out. That's all.
Thanks very much for your testimony. Sir?
I'm going to go ahead. And...
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Cooper. I'd like to first say that I believe the hearings officer was correct when he found that ERP is not measured according to a single channel of one antenna, though some opponents did initially argue that it should be the sum of all the antennas. He found that it was one antenna, that's fine, but it's not one channel of one antenna. And the applicant has made absolutely no strong argument to support that contention. If I look to the record, the most concise argument for their position that it should be one channel of one antenna, I found in BDS's memo post-hearing to Officer Frank, where they cite CFR Title 47. Officer Frank directly referenced that definition of ERP in his finding that it is one antenna. And then there was a second document referenced, which is known as the FCC's Human Exposure to Radio Frequency Fields Guidelines for Cellular and PCS Sites. BDS adds the comment, quote, this shows that the FCC permits ERP levels per channel. When you actually read the document cited, it states as follows, and I quote, although FCC permits ERP of up to 500 watts per channel, depending on the tower height, the majority of cellular or PCS cell sites in urban and suburban areas operate at an ERP of 100 watts per channel or less. Though we've questioned the reliability of the applicant's data, one number that they've continually used regarding the ERP of their facility is 759 watts ERP per channel. On the face of it, 759 is more than 500, and it would seem to contradict what the FCC says that it allows. There's no evidence of any sort that these antennas would operate on a single channel. And, you know, there was some discussion earlier when the appellant was making their case, well, you know, could we go out and measure the ERP at these facilities? What about all these facilities that are already out there? And I would ask you, do we have any idea what the ERP is on these facilities? The appellant has stated a couple things. One, I'll try to speak quickly, that, well, the 1,000 watts ERP really just means a wireless facility. And he also stated, if we're going to go into summarizing these channels, we'll find that there are a bunch of facilities out here that operate above 1,000 watts ERP. And, hey, that's why it just means, that's why the intent, legislative intent was this just means a wireless facility. Commissioner Leonard, I think, also raised the same issue. Don't we have a bunch of towers out there that are not compliant now with our regulations? Whether that's the case or not, that's not a good reason to approve this facility. And I want to just also say the appellant stated very clearly a couple times in his testimony today that if you go and add up the channels, you will, of course, come to more than 1,000 watts ERP. I have more points to add. I'm out of time. I do have a written summary of what I was going to say. If I can submit that, I will. It just refers to the record.
If you would go ahead and submit that, and we'll have a chance to look at it. Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Marcel Hermans. And yeah, there's a reason I can't cover anything that's wrong with this application within 3 minutes, and that is simply because there are so many issues. ERP is one of those, but there's many more. Pretty much this whole application is full of holes, doesn't hold any water, and I can't possibly go through all of that. I'll try to touch on a few of those. Hearings officer couldn't review the application throughout because he couldn't get past square one. Didn't really have credibility or clarity, so he just put it aside and said, okay, can't do anything with this tonight. We had the same issue. We, as the citizens of Portland, are trying to review this. We find all these things that don't make sense. How do you go past that if it doesn't have that basic credibility? I think it's a good sign that this hasn't happened in 20 years, as you said before, that he throws it out on square one. But I think you should give some value to that. There's a message in there. So anyway, in the written records as provided for the hearing, the earlier hearing, there's lots of details on where the application doesn't meet it, lots of details on ERP, also on the other city code requirements. No need to repeat all of that. As far as credibility, sure, you can side with the applicant and bypass the hearings officer. Applicant was found to be non-credible, so I know what I would do. Other points as to credibility in the records by applicant, 759 watts, 10,000 watts, 6,732 watts per sector with multiple sectors, 39.28 watts, it's all in there. Other points, Oregon law, as far as licensed engineers, there's a reason for that. This whole application violated Oregon law. It's happened before other company, Eugene. They were fined, and the city of Eugene said, we're not going to even consider this application because it violated Oregon law. Can't do that. Doctors will have to have a license for practicing medicine. If they don't, consequences. Engineers, they deal with public health as well. There's a reason that there's licensing. I know that the firm Hatfield and Dawson has licensed engineers. They rely on data from a non-licensed engineer. It's, in my mind, the same as a doctor non-licensed doctor prescribing a prescription and then saying, but the pharmacist was licensed. Okay.
Just wrap up with your final point, sir.
Okay. If there is going to be any additional evidence in the record, obviously I hope that everyone gets a chance to see that, review that, comment on that.
If we extend, if the council chooses to go that route, then everyone would be treated the same.
Okay. Let's see, there were two other things. Oh, one is there's lots of language in the FCC rules as to multiple antennas, cumulative. It's in the record. I would look at that. And if needed, go back to the actual FCC. Also have an email from the FCC. They confirm that it's cumulative for these types of things where it's thresholds.
Thank you, sir. We have to, in fairness to everyone else, thank you. Welcome, sir.
Hello. My name is Scott Valla. I'm from the Mount Scott Neighborhood Association. and as their delegate, I'm also a representative on the board for Southeast Uplift Coalition. I want to thank the commissioners and the mayor for giving us this opportunity. I have submitted a letter that was endorsed by the Southeast Uplift Coalition board on Monday in support of the Mount Scott Neighborhood's position on this. Most of those issues have been covered. It's more of a livability, a concern about many neighborhood associations all along Foster and in that area who've been working very hard to improve that area. I'm not going to get into any of the technical stuff. I've read it several times trying to understand it myself, and I think I got a pretty good grip of it. I would just like to touch on the fact that from a personal standpoint, being involved in the neighborhood association system, that this group of neighbors that came together really did some great things in our neighborhood. And a couple of them had come to some neighborhood association meetings in the past, but they weren't really involved with us. We also have a very new board, a lot of young people who have never really been involved in the neighborhood system for much more than 6-7 months. And these people came to us and they involved us. They brought their case to us. We went to some of their meetings as board members. They came back to us. And I think we all learned a whole lot from it. And our board members, who sometimes seem overwhelmed with the responsibility that's involved in being in their positions, have really worked very hard to do things right. They've gone out of their way to make sure everything's documented. This group has documented all their meetings, all the people that came, all the questions they had. And the neighborhood board didn't just rubber stamp approval of this just because they didn't want a cell tower in the street in the neighborhood, but they looked at all the issues and thought about it a lot. I think the main thing for me is that, you know, there's right ways to do things, and there's codes and there's issues like that, and people need to be held accountable for not doing that. And I think this group and the neighborhood association this time really did things as right as they could. And for me, there's really only one way to do this, and that's to judge in favor of the neighborhood association and the hearings officer on this, because I think that's just the right thing to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next group
are Walt Nichols, Neil Sutton, and Max Trisler, and Chris Hill was the last person who signed up.
Can we get everyone up? Mr. Nichols, welcome.
Welcome, Council. Walt Nichols and Mayor. I'm glad you're listening to this whole thing on the phone. This whole issue, I don't think it would have even come to light to the Neighborhood Association had it not been, if it had been 2,000 feet away from the current cell tower. And, you know, the only other issue might have been the screening and so forth. But this neighborhood association, the current board, has done some pretty miraculous things as far as livability issues. There's been 214 trees planted in Mount Scott-Arleta alone this year. So there's a lot of pride. One thing I would like to ask the mayor and the council, since Lake Oswego dumped the streetcar, that we would consider to put that money down the Hawthorne and out Foster to increase our urban development. Renewal development. And the other issue is that we need to look at the big picture of Mount Scott or Mount Scott Fuel, because that whole facility it's going to reach a point in time, it's going to be too valuable for what it's currently being used for, with the family owning it for 70 years, and then what's going to become if this tower does go in. But we really need the screening. It needs to be, I don't think it should be, because it is within 2,000 square feet, I don't think we should go down that slippery slope with it, and I strongly suspect that this issue is going to be one that's going to form a lot of cell tower issues in the years to come with what has come to light with this whole one. So thank you for your time.
Walt, welcome.
Hi, my name is Neil Sutton, and I'm the land use chair for the Mount Scott-Arleta Neighborhood Association. And I thank the commissioners and Mayor Adams for taking the time to listen to this very important item. I agree with my fellow residents on the fact that the ERP wattage data used by Hatfield and Dawson in their engineer's report was submitted by an unlicensed engineer by the name of Jeff Coley. He signed as an RF engineer. During the hearings process, we had done an extensive search trying to find license information for Mr. Coley and could not find any in the Oregon Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. In the recent past, the Law Enforcement Committee of the Oregon State Board of Four Examiners had specifically confirmed that the title RF engineer cannot legally be used in Oregon by someone who is not licensed as an engineer. I once again attempted the same search recently, trying very many different variations for Mr. Coley's name, and still came up with no results. But I did recall at the initial hearing Laura Hopfner stating that Mr. Coley was licensed in several states, including Oregon and Washington. So I did a complete search on Washington State's Department of Licensing and again came up with no results. I decided then to maybe try Idaho's Board of Licensure with no results, Utah, no results, California, no results. But when you Google RF engineer Jeff Coley, several past Verizon cell phone tower cases come up. And these past proposals included data and written testimony prepared for and signed by Mr. Coley, again listing himself as an RF engineer. So it kind of made me wonder if during these past land use cases anyone ever bothered to actually check into Mr. Coley's credentials. And I will remind you that Mr. Coley is a employee of Verizon. So as hearing officer Frank noted in his findings, since Mr. Coley is not licensed under the Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying, then any and all testimony and data prepared by him and then submitted by Verizon or referred to by other external consultants generally lacks credibility. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Max. I live in the neighborhood. My main concern is We have ordinance and what are they called? Rules, essentially, to govern our city and what goes in, what doesn't go in. We have an ordinance that says cell phone towers are supposed to be 2,000 feet away.